Obamacare has been a disaster, and it's only getting worse. Last year alone, Obamacare premiums increased by double digits. Since it has gone into effect, premiums are up by almost 100% in many areas. And I think that this year, it's going to be really the year that I've always been predicted. 17 is going to be a catastrophic year for Obamacare.
Donald Trump speaking to a group of mostly health insurance industry executives today. As the natives are growing restless on this Obamacare repeal and replace, and we've been talking to our own experts on this and reporting on this on Life Zet, and Ramin Oskwi, who I think remains one of the smartest people on this issue, is the head of cardiology for Johns Hopkins Sibley Hospital and has written a lot of stuff for us over the last year and a half. He points to a couple of things that must be done to address the underlying problem of the cost spiraling upward of healthcare, and everything from prescription drug costs to the cost of procedures themselves. We're talking now to Senator Rand Paul, senator from the great state of Kentucky, who is going to talk to us about this and a lot more. He joins us now. Senator Paul, great to have you with us.
Hey, Laura. Thanks for having me.
So I know you walked out of a meeting, was it last week, the week before, that involved, I think, did it involve Obamacare? I like the fact that you walked out, though. Yeah, that was like a good move. I like that. It was a concern they're not going to repeal and replace, so that's the concern. Now, everybody from John Kasich to John Boehner, both have come out and said, ain't going to repeal and replace. So that was just basically saying that's campaign talk. Where are we now on this issue?
Well, the House leadership was telling us in that meeting that we're going to get Obamacare light. We're, going to keep different aspects of Obamacare. And the point I made was that we got elected in 2010. We took over the House because we were for complete repeal. We took over the Senate in 2014 because we ran on complete repeal. We won the White House on a message of complete repeal, and I think that the grassroots conservatives who elected us will not only be disappointed, they'll be downright unhappy and justifiably so if we do not have complete repeal. So I'm for complete repeal, root and branch, the whole thing, not just part of it. Let's repeal all of Obamacare. It's a disaster for our country, but let's then replace it with market reforms that will bring down prices and allow more people to have inexpensive insurance.
Well, I've heard from various sources that leadership, and I'm focusing for a moment on House leadership, but obviously Paul Ryan's very important in shepherding real reform through, that they're concerned about leaving millions of people without adequate coverage, people who are in the middle of procedures and so forth. And so they want to hold on to part of Obamacare. They want to hold on to you can stay on your parents' plan till you're 26, and they want to hold on to pre-existing conditions. Is that what you're hearing?
Yeah, the 26-year-old provision is just a cost, and it does take the young people out of the marketplace, so they're not buying insurance. And, can the country live with that? Yeah, they probably can. If you keep the condition that you can buy insurance after you get sick, the insurance markets will continue to fail, the insurance companies will fail, and premiums will continue to rise. And every insurance executive will tell you, oh yeah, we're for keeping that mandate, but we need subsidies. So we had all the insurance CEOs up here on the Hill, and every one of them said, if you get rid of the individual mandate, but you still allow people to buy insurance after they get sick, you will have to have subsidies for that market because it will become a downward spiral of adverse selection, and you have to have subsidies. So the insurance companies realize that they're in it for their own self-interest. They're not in it for America, and that's fine to be for capitalism, but they want capitalism with the taxpayer subsidy is what they want.
One of the problems that Dr. Oskwi points to is what he calls the collusion that exists to fix prices and restrain competition within the healthcare industry, and that the way to really bring costs down, which is the ultimate problem here, is the cost keeps going up and up and up, is to get rid of the exemption that these healthcare providers have from antitrust laws. And he said, once you do that, and you really do that, then you'll actually have the opportunity to bring down costs by 60 to 70%, in meaning you wouldn't really need health insurance for routine events like strep throat or sprained ankle. It would be so inexpensive to go to the doctors. You would just need it for cataclysmic.
He's exactly right, and this is the counterintuitive aspect of healthcare reform. Nobody wants to pay for healthcare when they go to the doctor. They want it to sort of be free, mm-hmm. but if it is sort of, in quotes, free and insurance pays for it, you're going to pay an extraordinary amount for insurance. In a real insurance market, under real capitalism, you'd have higher deductibles, and most of your day-to-day expenses you'd pay for with a check. You would write a check to your doctor when you went, but your premiums would be very, very cheap. And so in a real marketplace, the higher your deductible, the cheaper your premium. Under Obamacare, you got the worst of all worlds. You got high deductibles and high premiums. And so we do need to fix that. They're also right as far as antitrust goes. In order to get leverage, you want to allow the small guy to group together, the individuals. So part of my replacement plan lets every individual get away from the individual market and buy their insurance as a group. So if you joined the Chamber of Commerce or the National Federation of Independent Businesses, and let's say there were 100,000 people that joined and they all became an association and bought their insurance to them, you would then be king. The consumer would be king. You would tell the insurance companies, we want guaranteed issue, just like any other group insurance, and we want a better price. So it's just basic economics that two people, mom and pop, that own a pest control are going to get a crummy price and a crummy kind of insurance that drops them and raises their price when they get sick. But if mom and pop pest control joined the NFIB and became a 100,000-fold insurance association or a group association, all of that goes by the wayside. We cure all of the problems and mm-hmm. we force the prices down.
Osqui also says, I'm sorry I'm using him as a benchmark, but he's really smart. I'd like to get you two together. I think you would like him. He's brilliant. He said that the exemption, part of the exemption, I guess, that you're wanting to enact is actually already exists in law, in U.S. law. And he cites, I guess is it 15 U.S.C. Chapter 1, which is basically attacking the preferred insurance market that allows people to be billed at all these differential rates. So if you don't have preferred insurance and you're just someone who pays for health insurance, they can charge you 10 times more than they will charge other people. So he believes that actually already exists and can be done.
There are definitely things that the administration can do to open the door for more of a marketplace. So, for example, on the health associations, in Kentucky, with the home builders have an association plan. They have about 1,000 people in it. But they're forbidden from sort of allying with the home builders of Arkansas, Arizona, and having a bigger association. Some of that, though, came about from President Obama. Like everything else that he touched, he turned to stone. He forbid people from joining that weren't home builders. It used to be a little bit more open that, you know, if your buddy lives across the street, knows about the Home Builders Association, you'd let them join it. So some of this is in the definition of what the president wants to do. If the president opens the door on associations, even if we can't get Democrats to vote for it, President Trump can open the door and say, you know what, we're going to interpret the rules on associations that anybody who wants to join one can join one. And if he does that, we could get national associations and get big associations. This will empower the consumer. So I think that you really need this. The insurance companies are enormous and they have all the power. They're every one of them against health associations, and every one of them are against selling health insurance mm-hmm. across state lines. They say it won't work, but I fear that they're really telling us they'll make less money. And my concern is that the consumer be treated better. My concern isn't necessarily with the insurance company's problem.
Where do you stand on the big pharma issue here? Because Trump came out and talked like he was going to address the, again, spiral upward of prescription drug prices, and there'd be more competitive bidding, which is not done. As it is with OECD countries, from the largest drug companies in the United States, they give a lot of money to both parties, and the skyrocketing cost of prescription drugs especially hits the elderly hard. Even Medicare can't cover a lot of these expenses. What of that?
It's also just like the rest of healthcare. Once you get everything paid for by some third party that's between you and the consumer, what we need is more that the consumer buys it. So you should be buying it out of your health savings account and driving prices down. On the government angle, what we need to do is we need to say, instead of it costing $2 billion to bring a drug to market, we need to shorten that time and make it cost a fraction of that to get a drug to market. We need to let generics compete. We need to not have patents that last forever. The EpiPen was a scandal. $600 for two EpiPens. It probably cost them about $20 to make. The epinephrine that's in the EpiPen is about 10 cents. So the thing is we've had generics trying to come on board for 7 years, mm-hmm. and the FDA drags their feet. So the generic market needs to be freed up, and we need to have an FDA that is facilitating, not enabling, you know, facilitating consumer and competition and not enabling monopoly.
We're talking to Rand Paul here on the Laura Ingraham Show. There is a friend of mine, Heather Higgins, has written a piece about how, look, the GOP, you know, they say they can't fully replace Obamacare because of the Senate rules that require 60 votes. But they can do certain things through reconciliation. Again, people's eyes are glazing over across the country when I say this. But that requires only a simple majority. But the problem with doing it through reconciliation, correct me if I'm wrong, Senator, is that, of course, that's only limited to the matters of spending and taxing. So, in other words, all the other nasty stuff, the anti-competitive, stifling competition parts of Obamacare, that gets left in place, correct?
There is a danger, and some of it's these arcane rules of the Senate, but there is a danger that part of Obamacare, even with pretty complete repeal, stays in place. That's why I've been saying over and over again, mm-hmm. when you have repeal or partial repeal, Obamacare will continue to get worse, and in fact, may get worse even quicker. The downward death spiral of Obamacare continues after repeal.
Right.
And that's why I've been telling conservatives, we have to be for replacement also, whether Democrats will vote for it or not. We need to be for replacement because over the next 2 years, Obamacare will continue to unravel. There's still going to be disaster in the insurance markets, and we need to make sure people understand this is still Obamacare's fault, that we are for replacement, market replacements, and if Democrats won't vote for the replacement, they need to catch the blame of what's going to continue to happen in all of the health care market.
We're talking to Senator Paul. Senator, I want to switch gears for a moment. Congressman Devin Nunes, head of House Intel, was just answering questions from members of the press on the supposed Russian connections with the Trump campaign. I mean, the press is like a dog with a bone on a bone on this Russia issue. And Nunes came out and said that basically the FBI has found no evidence of these regular contacts between members of the campaign and Trump. Let's listen.
There is no evidence that I've been presented of regular contact with anybody within the Trump campaign. The only one that's obvious is General Flynn's discussions with the Russians, which I would still contend that he was doing what he was supposed to do, which is prepare the president-elect for office by getting as many leaders in front of him as possible.
Press followed that up by saying, well, what about a special counsel? He says, well, special counsel to look at what? What are we looking at? Because what about all this?
I'm in the same place. Tell me what law has been broken. Present some evidence.
That's
and then
what he
ask
said.
Me again. If you have no evidence that a law has been broken, and here's the whole thing that people need to step back and think about. Every president-elect and their counselors talk to foreign leaders after and in the transition between the election and the swearing in. President Obama did it. His team of advisors talked to Assad and their government and assured them they were going to have a different approach than Bush did. They did this in the interim. How could it possibly be illegal for the president? President Trump talked to 12 leaders in the transition period. Is that a breach of the Logan Act? He was a private citizen. Is he not allowed to talk to foreign leaders? Would that be against the law? It is completely insane, never enforced, will not be enforced, and really can't be illegal for a national security advisor to talk to an ambassador of another country. So this is all, you know, unless there's some other evidence I'm unaware of, it's all sort of being politicized.
And we literally have about 30 seconds, Senator, but George W. Bush came out after not speaking out for 8 years on anything that Barack Obama did, came out today and veiled swipes at Donald Trump for the temporary ban on the visas travel and also on not having an aggressive, forward-looking foreign policy that will, you know, leave the world less safe.
You know, I think a lot of the mischief and the bankruptcy of our country and the thousands of lives we've lost have been over a misguided notion that we, sort of a Wilsonian notion that we can make the world safe for democracy. Our job should be to defend our country's vital national interest, and that should be debated in Congress, and the Constitution says you don't go to war unless the legislature votes for it. If we obeyed the Constitution, we would have a lot less problem. I think Donald Trump has sent a good message on some things. He said nation building has cost us a lot of treasure, a lot of lives. Regime change hasn't made us safer. And really that the end result of the Iraq war was that it made Iran stronger and destabilized the Middle East. So I'm kind of with the president on this.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Rand Paul here on the Laura Ingraham Show trying to get this good work done on Obamacare repeal and replace. Senator, thank you. Stay with us.
The Laura Ingraham Show.